Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 5th of March, 2013, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. This is episode 59 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each show we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to delve into the mysterious realm of psychic predictions. We're going to see how we went with our last round of psychic predictions, and we're going to make a fresh round of predictions for the coming year. Plus, we'll have a quick look at what some of the celebrity psychics say is going to happen in 2013. Then, in our movie review, we'll have a look at three very different but very interesting movies: The Imposter, The Impossible, and Zero Dark Thirty. So for all that and more, stay tuned here to Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Now, just before we begin today's LGBT news roundup, I'd just like to let you know about a talk that I'm giving at the monthly meeting of the Victorian Skeptics in April. The topic of my talk is How to Change the World, Using the Media to Promote Skepticism. So basically, I'll be laying out my vision of how the skeptical movement can transform itself into a slick and powerful media machine that speaks with authority and makes politicians and bureaucrats sit up and listen. All right, that may be somewhat optimistic, but you've got to dream big to achieve big things. So if you'd like to come along to that talk, and you are most warmly invited, dear listener, that's going to be on Monday the 15th of April at 8 o'clock in the evening at La Notte Restaurant in Lygon Street in Carlton. For more information, just Google Vic Skeptics and go to their events page. But do try to come along. Hopefully we can have some interesting discussion about what we should be doing as a skeptical movement. All right, now let's get into our LGBT news roundup covering the time since the last episode of Reality Check back on December 26th. So that's covering the last 2 months, basically. Let's start with marriage news, and as usual, the marriage equality train continues to steam ahead around the world. Now, actually, no place in the world has achieved marriage equality over these last 2 months, but several places have made remarkable progress. So where do we start? Well, perhaps with the two most significant countries, the two traditional great European powers, rivals for centuries, and now racing to see which one is going to be the first to achieve full marriage equality. And I'm talking, of course, about Great Britain and France. Let's look first at Britain. Now, first of all, I just want to point out the interesting way that marriage equality is advancing in the UK, because it's actually progressing differently in different parts of the country. England and Wales are moving ahead separately from Scotland and separately from Northern Ireland. So you really need to look at those three divisions individually. So looking at just England and Wales, well, this is the region that's advanced the most because on February the 5th, the Marriage Equality Bill was passed by the British House of Commons in a resounding vote of 400 in favour to 175 against. Really a stunning victory, especially considering that the UK is currently governed by the Conservative Party. Now, many commentators have pointed out that it's actually quite embarrassing for David Cameron that just over half of the Conservative MPs, 136 actually, voted against the bill. But what I think is amazing is that almost half, 127 Tory MPs, voted in favour of marriage equality. These are Tories, Conservatives. Now that would have been unthinkable even just a few years ago. David Cameron didn't have to push this issue. He did it because he really believes in marriage equality on principle, and I think that's admirable. That's the kind of backbone in a politician that we are so sadly lacking here in Australia, at least in the major parties. As for what happens now in England and Wales, well, the bill will spend a few weeks in committee in the House of Commons and then go to the House of Lords, where there may be a bit of a fuss, but given its overwhelming support in the lower house, it will almost certainly get through the House of Lords and so is almost certain to become law sometime this year. So very, very exciting. Meanwhile, in those other parts of the UK that I mentioned, the Scottish Government has announced its intention to bring forward similar legislation sometime soon, but Northern Ireland seems to be dragging its heels. In fact, there seems to be no strong movement towards marriage equality there at all. Maybe the Republic of Ireland will get it before Northern Ireland does. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. Okay, let's move across the channel now to France, where there have been equally astonishing developments. On February 12th, exactly a week after the extraordinary events in Westminster, the French National Assembly approved a marriage equality bill, 329 to 229. The bill now moves to the Senate, where it will be voted on in early April. The Senate, like the lower house, is controlled by the Socialist Party, so its passage there is almost guaranteed. Meaning that France, like Britain, is now on track to become one of the next countries to achieve marriage equality. And most likely this year, 2013. Interestingly, the French bill also gives same-sex couples the right to adopt children. Something the British bill doesn't include, because same-sex couples in the UK already have that right. They got it back in 2002. Anyway, more on adoption coming up in a moment. But first, let's continue with marriage news and cross the Atlantic now to the United States, where there has also been a lot of movement these last couple of months, with legislatures there too also approving marriage equality bills. On January 24th, the lower house of the Rhode Island legislature approved a marriage equality bill, 51 to 19. And on February 14th, Valentine's Day, the upper house of Illinois also approved a marriage equality bill, 34 to 21. In both states, the bills now pass to the other legislative chamber, where their futures are still far from certain. It's not at all clear whether the Rhode Island upper house or the Illinois lower house have the numbers to get the bills through. But let's hope so. And, well, I may even be having a punt on this in our psychic predictions section coming up later in the show. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, that's it for marriage news. Now, let's return to the issue of adoption rights for same-sex couples. Now, when we talk about adoption rights, we need to be clear what type of rights we're talking about, because there are basically two categories. There's full adoption rights, where a couple can jointly adopt children, whether those kids are biologically related to them or not. Currently in the world, only 13 countries allow these kinds of full adoption rights to same-sex couples. Then there's step-parent adoption, which is where one member of a couple adopts the biological child of the other member. And there are 5 countries that only allow same-sex couples to adopt children as step-parents, but don't give those couples full adoption rights. Then you have 3 more countries, namely the US, Mexico, and Australia, where same-sex adoption rights differ from state to state. So in total, we've got 21 countries where some form of adoption is allowed by same-sex couples in at least part of the country. And just like marriage, the right to adopt children is also following a similar, slow but inexorable path to full equality around the world, country by country, state by state. And this process was given a big boost in Europe a few weeks ago, because on the 19th of February, the European Court of Human Rights handed down a landmark decision on adoption rights for same-sex couples. This is the court's most far-reaching decision on the issue so far. Now, the specific case had been brought against Austria, but the ruling now applies throughout all the 47 member countries of the Council of Europe. So, the ruling concerned only step-parent adoptions, and what the court found is this. If a country allows step-parent adoptions for unmarried couples, then it has to apply equally to same-sex couples as well as to opposite-sex couples. Because what Austria had done was say, okay, we allow married couples the right to step-parent adoption, and we also allow unmarried couples the same right, but only if they're a man and a woman. So the court said, no, if you're going to allow unmarried couples the right to step-parent adoption, this has to apply to all unmarried couples, including same-sex couples. So, a very important ruling. But what does it mean in practice? Well, it means that countries that currently allow unmarried couples to adopt, but restrict that right to opposite-sex couples only, well, they'll now have to give those adoption rights to same-sex couples as well. Or we'll have to take those rights away from unmarried couples and say that only married couples can adopt. So they'll have to make that choice, basically. And how many countries are in that situation? Well, there are 8 European countries that already allow full adoption rights for same-sex couples, so they're okay. There are 2 other European countries that allow step-parent adoption for same-sex partners, so they're okay too. But there are 9 other European countries that allow step-parent adoption by unmarried opposite-sex partners only, including Switzerland, Portugal, and Romania. So those 9 countries will now be required to extend that right to same-sex partners as well. Or take it away from everyone. Let's hope they choose the former. And of course the ruling also means that if in future any other European countries want to extend adoption rights to unmarried couples, they'll have to include same-sex couples as well. So quite a significant breakthrough there in Europe. And whatever those countries do decide to do in the future, dear listener, you can be sure you'll hear about it here on Reality Check. Now, just before we finish our update on adoption rights, let's have a quick look at the situation here in Australia, where they vary from state to state. So Western Australia, New South Wales, and the ACT all offer full adoption rights to same-sex couples. Tasmania allows step-parent adoption rights only. and the rest of the states and territories offer nothing, including our beloved home state of Victoria. Yes, dear listener, here in marvellous Melbourne, the world's most livable city that thinks it's a shining example for human rights throughout the world, same-sex couples are prohibited from adopting children, whether those children are biologically related to a member of the couple or not. And the worst part is that this is unlikely to change in the foreseeable future. Because on the 13th of February, the Labor Party in Victoria held a forum to supposedly get input from the LGBT community to help it form its policies in the lead-up to the next election. And of course, Reality Check was in attendance at that forum, and Reality Check stood up and asked a direct question to the leader of the opposition himself, Daniel Andrews. And the question was whether Labor is going to stand up for full equality and allow same-sex couples to adopt children. Unfortunately, dear listener, Daniel Andrews gave a waffling, wishy-washy kind of answer that went on about, wouldn't it be great if we could have a national law on this, and I believe in achieving practical results for the people of Victoria, and blah, 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 and completely avoided answering the question. In other words, what he really said was, no, we don't support same-sex adoption, and we're not going to anytime in the near future. So unfortunately, dear listener, I hate to say it, but even if Labor returns to government in Victoria next year, we're not going to see any action on adoption for many years, it would appear. Even while the rest of the world continues to move way ahead of us, as it always seems to do. Finally, for our last LGBT news story for today, I just want to briefly mention what has been probably the biggest coming out story for some time. And I'm talking, of course, about Jodie Foster's speech at the Golden Globes on January 13th. Now, Jodie Foster had pretty much been out for several years, or so I'd thought, at least I think it's been pretty well known within the LGBT community for some time. But in that speech, she basically came out to the world at large. Which I think is a pretty big deal. Because have we ever seen a Hollywood star of her caliber come out in the middle of their career? Ever? I mean, sure, we've had gay or bisexual Hollywood stars before, like Rock Hudson, Marlon Brando, Montgomery Clift, etc. But as far as I know, no A-list Hollywood star has ever actually come out during their careers. So it would seem to me that Jodie Foster is the first, meaning that once again, dear listener, we're seeing history in the making. So I say good on you, Jodie, congratulations. And by the way, even more kudos to Jodie Foster because she's an atheist as well. An atheist, a lesbian, and an A-list Hollywood star. Well, she must listen to Reality Check as well, surely. Anyway, that brings us to the end of our LGBT news roundup for the last couple of months. Let's take a quick break now and listen to a song. And when we come back, we'll delve into the mysterious world of psychic predictions. We'll see what the psychics have to say about 2013, and we'll make a few predictions of our own. Some of them shocking. So don't go away. Much more Reality Check coming up here on Joy 94.9.
Melbourne's biggest gay voice has a fresh new sound.
Fresh new sound.
Joy
94.9. Je fais de l'avant, c'est ma direction. Ma direction. Ah, fuck le taf.
Salut tous mes belles gays et mes beaux lesos. C'est Matthew Mitchum et vous écoutez à Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Ma Direction by French rap group Section d'Assaut. And I played that song because, well, it was one of the biggest hits in France in 2012. And I wanted to honor La Belle France as it moves towards becoming the next country in the world to achieve full marriage equality within the coming months. Okay, we now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And today, as it's our first show of 2013, we're going to delve into the mysterious world of psychic predictions. At the start of every year, the world's greatest psychics always make a series of predictions for the year ahead. And at the end of every year, they always loudly claim credit for the predictions that came true, and always conveniently forget the ones that didn't. So, dear listener, for today's very special psychic predictions exposé, we're going to do it in three parts. First, we're going to have a relatively brief look at some of the predictions of the world's greatest psychics. And I'll try to make it brief because, well, spoiler alert, they're not very impressive, so I don't want to spend too much time on them. Then we'll have a look at how I went in my last round of psychic predictions made 18 months ago. And finally, I'm going to make a fresh round of predictions for the coming year. So without any further ado, let's jump straight into it and see how the great professional psychics went last year and what they've predicted for the year ahead. And let's start with everybody's favorite psychic cow. Yes, the old hag herself, Sylvia Brown. Now, just in case you don't know who Sylvia is, she's a sweet old woman who exploits the weak and vulnerable to make lots of money. Just to remind you how delightful she is, let's hear a couple of clips of Sylvia's greatest moments on the Montel Williams show, where members of the audience ask Sylvia questions about their lost loved ones. In both these clips, the people asking the questions look completely shocked and confused when Sylvia tells them how their loved ones died. I wonder why. Well, let's have a listen.
I lost my boyfriend tragically a few years ago. They never found him. And I've had such a hard time since. Every day.
The reason why you didn't find him is because he's in water. And find him in water, it's like the girl that's missing in Aruba. You can't find somebody.
Well, it was September 11th. He was a fireman, but
See, I keep seeing him in water. Is there any way he could have drowned in water some way?
They never found a piece of him. Nothing.
From 9/11.
Because he says he couldn't breathe and he was filled with water.
Did you hear that, dear listener? That stupid bitch dared to question Sylvia's amazing insight. She'll be sorry. You tell her, Sylvia.
No, it's water.
Yeah, she sure taught her a lesson. Okay, let's listen to the next little clip.
You got a question for Sylvia about your daughter, Michelle?
My daughter, Michelle, was 17 years old. She'll be gone 5 years, the 21st of this year. Sylvia, I don't know how she died. Please, if you can, how did she die?
She was shot.
Circumstances around her death?
She just collapsed in her room.
I don't know, but something looks like it hit the chest. Because it looks like a combustion.
They found nothing on the autopsy.
I don't care, but it looks like something hit her in the chest.
Yeah, you tell him, Sylvia. Don't you love the way she tells him?
I don't care. Something hit her in the chest. Stop questioning me, you stupid bitches.
Yeah, you tell them, Sylvia. You tell them what they need to know. You've got to hand it to Sylvia Brown. She sure has a wonderful, caring way of dealing with grieving people. And besides her kind and loving nature, Sylvia also makes really incredible predictions every year. Let's have a look at a selection of predictions she made for 2012 to see how they turned out. All right, here are some of them.
Weather stays terribly erratic. We are in a polar tilt.
Whatever that means.
There will be earthquakes in Japan, China, and Europe.
Oh, earthquakes in those parts of the world? Like there are every single year? Huh.
I am still worried about train travel.
Okay, interesting prediction.
Small spiritual groups like mine and many others will visit and fundraise to help the elderly and impoverished.
Oh, that's right. Sylvia started her own religion to make more money. Oh, oops, sorry, I mean to help the elderly and impoverished. Oh, Sylvia. Oh, and finally, what about this one for proof of Sylvia's incredible psychic ability? Her most stunning prediction for 2012.
Obama will not be re-elected. The next president will be a Republican.
Well, as Sylvia always says herself, she's just human. She can't be expected to be right 100% of the time. Well, that's certainly true. At least that's one thing she's right about. Now, dear listener, I'm sure you're all dying to know what darling Sylvia's amazing predictions are for 2013. And I'm really dying to tell you. However, I can't, because Sylvia's changed her website so that now, in order to read or hear her predictions, you have to join what's called Sylvia's Inner Circle. That is, you have to pay an annual membership fee of $49.95 to be able to access her website. Oh, which is well worth it, I'm sure. I mean, Sylvia's predictions are always so accurate and insightful. And besides, you get to be part of her inner circle. Wow. Oh, Sylvia. Sylvia, what a special case you are. And speaking of special cases, let's have a look at the predictions of our other favorite psychic here on Reality Check, Nikki, Psychic to the Stars. And I have to tell you, dear listener, although I am generally quite skeptical about most psychics, there's something uncanny about Nikki that just makes me wonder if she might have some kind of, well, unique ability. Because the amazing thing about Nikki, I have to say, is how few of her predictions actually come true. It's almost like she has some kind of anti-psychic ability, which is itself something quite paranormal. I mean, she makes literally hundreds of predictions every year, and only a handful actually come true. She seems to have a unique and unexplainable capacity to predict everything that will not happen during the coming year. It's quite astounding. For example, out of about 300 predictions she made for 2012, she claims only 9 as hits. 9 out of 300. And even those 9, well, how can I put it? They weren't exactly earth-shattering. For example, Nikki, at the start of 2012, predicted
trouble in Syria.
Wow, That trouble actually began in early 2011, and she was able to predict it in 2012, well after the event had started. That's like reverse prediction. That is astounding. Yeah. Another earth-shattering prediction that she made was pregnancy for Kate and William. Wow! Nobody saw that one coming. And amongst the over 100 celebrity deaths that she predicted, she managed to get three right, including Phyllis Diller and Ernest Borgnine, who were both 94 at the time. Just incredible, Nikki. Incredible. Alright, so given her past track record, let's see what gems she comes up with for 2013. Well, amongst those listed in her Celebrity Health Watch section, which includes death and any other possible health issues at all, she includes people like Kirk Douglas and Zsa Zsa Gabor, who are now both 96, and Nelson Mandela, who's 94. And what's more, she includes them every year, year after year. So they're bound to come true eventually, which makes it all the more surprising that she gets so few right every year. Well, I guess she always needs to include some obvious ones just to maintain a baseline level of hits. For example, for 2013, some other obvious things she's predicting are
weird weather conditions worldwide,
whatever that means, and
live turtles in a plane.
Okay, I guess that's probably how people transport live turtles. And
a disease around sheep.
Oh, like the millions and millions of sheep that die of disease every year? Something like that? Okay, so she always guarantees herself a good baseline of hits. That's fine. But then the rest of her list she fills up with, frankly, bizarre and highly unlikely, and sometimes incomprehensible, predictions, like the following that she's made for 2013.
Man-eating plants. Cuba becoming part of the USA. A person falling into a large aquarium being killed by a fish. Experimental monkeys escape from a lab, causing a pandemic. Civil war will break out in the USA. A famous person will get eaten by a grizzly. A hole in the Earth's core. Northern Ireland, Belfast, and Dublin at war again.
Northern Ireland and Belfast at war? Okay.
Fish and sea life evaporating worldwide.
Literally, Nikki? Literally evaporating? Fish?
Earthquake in the British Isles.
And
a 9.1 earthquake hits Moscow, Russia.
Interesting, given that neither the British Isles nor Moscow lie anywhere near a major fault line.
Tsunami in Malibu.
Okay, not on the Pacific coast of North America generally, not even the coast of California, but just
Malibu?
Okay, interesting prediction. Well, dear listener, you can be guaranteed that if any of these predictions do come true, we'll definitely let you know about it here in a future episode of Reality Check. Now, in all honesty, dear listener, as convincing as Sylvia and Psychic Nikki are, I hate to say it, but I just don't think they provide clear and compelling evidence as to the existence of psychic powers. Which is where Reality Check comes in, because Even though, in the history of the world, no one has ever shown that psychic powers exist, and even though they are completely implausible, given everything we know about anatomy and neurology and physics, we still have to maintain an open mind. So it's always possible that on today's episode of Reality Check, we will overturn the fundamental principles of science, and we will, through our own psychic predictions, demonstrate to the world that we have psychic powers. So let's see, how did we go in our last round of psychic predictions? Are we ready to go and claim James Randi's $1 million prize? Well, maybe. Let's see. Now, the last time I made predictions was back in July 2011. And being the middle of the year, I gave myself a period of 18 months for my psychic predictions to come true. So that's from July 2011 until the end of December 2012. And following a recurrent theme here on Reality Check, back in July 2011, I predicted 3 countries that would get marriage equality, plus 3 US states, plus 3 celebrity death predictions. So let's look first at the 3 countries that I predicted would achieve marriage equality by the end of 2012. And they were Denmark, Uruguay, and... Australia. Yeah. I predicted Australia. Now I need to remind you, dear listener, that back then in July 2011, when I made that prediction and included Australia, I was not well. If I remember correctly, I think I was suffering from a bout of scarlet fever or something, but obviously not in a clear thinking state of mind. But anyway, I made that prediction, so let's look at how we went. Well, with Denmark, absolutely spot on. A perfect, unambiguous hit. A marriage equality bill was approved by the Danish Parliament on June 7th, 2012, and same-sex couples started marrying on the 15th of June 2012. So a clear hit for Reality Check. No one can take that one away from me. What about Uruguay? Well, it was close. So close. Because on December 11th, 2012, the lower house of the parliament approved a marriage equality bill by a staggering majority of 81 to 6. And that bill was going to be voted on by the Senate on the 26th of December. However, unfortunately for Reality Check, that vote was postponed until April. So the bill hasn't been approved by the Senate yet, and as yet, same-sex couples cannot get married in Uruguay. It was so, so close, though. So, while not strictly a hit, still pretty good evidence of my incredible psychic power. And as Sylvia Brown says, we can't be completely right all the time. Now, as for my third prediction, which was, as I mentioned, Australia, well, on the positive side, there was definitely movement in Australia towards marriage equality. The Australian Parliament did vote on a marriage equality bill in September 2012, and a total of 68 MPs actually voted in favour. That's the first time that's happened. So that's a kind of a hit. Well, it wasn't enough to get the bill through either the House of Reps or the Senate, but still pretty good validation of my psychic powers, I think. Just not exactly the clear and unambiguous validation that I was hoping for. Well, no matter, all is not lost because we've still got the US states to get through. My psychic powers could still come to the fore there. So let's have a look. How did I go when it came to predicting the next 3 states to achieve marriage equality? Well, in July 2011, the 3 states that I predicted were Maine, Maryland, and Rhode Island. Now, here I clearly did better, because as you'll probably remember, dear listener, both Maine and Maryland had referenda on marriage equality at the time of the US elections on the 6th of November last year. And it was approved in both states, meaning that both states did in fact achieve marriage equality in 2012. Meaning that that's two more clear and indisputable hits for Reality Check. As for Rhode Island, well, as we reported at the start of the show, the lower house of the state legislature approved a marriage equality bill in January. But unfortunately, that's January 2013, not 2012. And it still hasn't gone to the state senate yet. So unfortunately for Reality Check, marriage equality is not quite yet a reality in that state. But it's so close that I think, while not strictly a hit, it can once again clearly count as validation of my psychic powers. Okay, so I'm going pretty well so far. Clear hits with Denmark, Maine, and Maryland. Not quite so clear hits with Uruguay, Australia, and Rhode Island, but still pretty good supporting evidence for my claim to possess psychic powers. But what about the toughest category of all? My celebrity death predictions. How did I go with those? Well, first of all, let's have a listen to the predictions that I made back in July 2011. Kevin Rudd, Tom Cruise, and Oprah Winfrey will all die in terrible freak accidents before the year 2012 has come to an end. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry if I shock you, dear listener, but that's what I'm sensing. Now, Kevin Rudd is going to be walking beside a lagoon in far north Queensland when suddenly a giant saltwater crocodile leaps out of the murky water and drags him under to a terrible and violent death. Tom Cruise is going to be filming Mission Impossible 5 in the Bahamas when he falls out of a helicopter into the sea, 200 meters below. And the sea is infested with sharks. His body will never be found, leading to a lot of speculation and conspiracy theories. Then, just days later, at his memorial service in the chapel of the Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Los Angeles, Oprah Winfrey will be in attendance, when suddenly an earth tremor causes a lump of masonry to fall out of the ceiling and plummet straight down onto her head, crushing her into a pulp. Thanks to Rick Air Productions for the spooky music there. Well, there you have it, dear listener. I predicted in July 2011 that Kevin Rudd, Tom Cruise, and Oprah Winfrey would all be dead by now. And they are. So I win, basically. I mean, okay, they may not be strictly medically dead, but they're all pretty much dead in every other possible way. I mean, let's look at Kevin Rudd. In February 2012, he challenged Julia Gillard for the Labour leadership and went down in flames. And since then, well, he's been a dead duck, basically. And a dead duck is, well, dead. So my prediction came true. Never mind that there's now speculation that he's going to make another attempt at a comeback. My prediction remains intact. And Tom Cruise? Well, dead as well, obviously. I mean, 2012 was a disastrous year for him. He had that very public and very ugly divorce from Katie Holmes, plus all the continuing scandal surrounding the fact that he's a wackaloon Scientologist, plus his movie Rock of Ages was a massive flop. So clearly, his career and his personal life all took a massive dive in 2012. His career is now basically over. The guy is as dead as a doornail. Which brings us to Oprah Winfrey, who is now also, for all intents and purposes, dead. She cancelled her own show in May 2011 to focus on her network, the Oprah Winfrey Network, which, guess what, dear listener, has been a massive failure and has losses in the hundreds of millions of dollars so far. That's a lot of money down the tube, meaning that Oprah Winfrey is now, in almost every sense of the word, dead as Kevin Rudd and Tom Cruise. Dead, finished, gone, kaput. So, in all fairness, those should really be another three perfect hits there for my psychic predictions. But I know that you pedants out there are already hovering over your keyboards to send in a round of vociferous complaint emails. So, okay, to try to head you off, I'll admit that neither Kevin Rudd nor Tom Cruise nor Oprah Winfrey actually medically died during 2011 or 2012. So, all right, I won't actually count them as hits in my final tally. Meaning that at the end of all this, my final tally for the predictions I made back in July 2011 is 3 out of 9, or 33%. So, not bad. Certainly an improvement on last time when I got 1 out of 9. In fact, that's an improvement of 200%. Now that's astounding. That clearly shows that my psychic powers are improving with practice, meaning that maybe in my next round of psychic predictions, I'll finally hit the jackpot. 9 out of 9. Well, why don't we put that to the test right now by making a fresh round of psychic predictions for the coming months of 2013. Now, please note, dear listener, that we're already up to the 5th of March, so I'm really allowing myself less than 10 months for these predictions to come true. So already, that's a daunting challenge, but one that we're prepared to face here on Reality Check. So, as tradition now dictates here on Reality Check, I need to choose 3 countries and 3 states of the US that will achieve marriage equality in 2013. And I also need to pick 3 celebrities who will tragically die in 2013. Okay, so let me call up my spirit guides and see what they have to say. Now, in terms of countries that are going to get marriage equality this year, well, I could take the easy route and say France, the UK, Uruguay and New Zealand, because it is almost certain that those 4 countries will achieve marriage equality in 2013. But choosing things that are already foregone conclusions, well, that's something that Sylvia Brown would do. But not us here at Reality Check. No, we're going to make it a bit more challenging in order to prove that we really do have psychic powers. So I'm going to look beyond those 4 obvious countries and choose the next 3 to get marriage equality. So my spirit guides are telling me, wait, here it comes, Luxembourg, Finland, and Colombia. Oh, why, okay, interesting. All right, I'll lock them in now and we'll come back to those in our first show of 2014 to see if any of them did come true. Oh, sorry, I mean to undeniably confirm the existence of my psychic powers. So keep those in mind, dear listener, Luxembourg, Finland and Colombia, and we'll see what happens in the coming 10 months or so. Now, what about the next US states to get same-sex marriage? Alright, once again, let me tune into my spirit guides. Now, I'm getting signals on Oregon, New Jersey, Minnesota maybe, Hawaii? No. My spirit guides are telling me no, not yet. They need a little more time. Save them for 2014. So my spirit guides are saying that for 2013, it's going to be Illinois, Rhode Island, and Delaware. And what? Oh, wait. Oh, my God, this is unprecedented. My spirit guides are throwing in a fourth prediction. They're saying California. Wow, they're saying that whatever the U.S. Supreme Court decides in June on the Proposition 8 case, it will involve reinstating marriage equality in California. Gosh. Well, dear listener, what can I say? I guess I have to go with what my spirit guides tell me. So that's Illinois, Rhode Island, Delaware, and California all locked in. Let's come back to them in 2014 and see how we did. Oh, sorry, prove my psychic powers. Now, of course, by predicting the next jurisdictions to get marriage equality, some critics could accuse me of actually doing research and analysis, looking at trends and graphs and politics and number crunching. Of course, that's not true. I rely purely on my spirit guides. But I do leave myself open to that kind of vicious attack, I can see. So, to counter that criticism, I'm going to make a round of celebrity death predictions. No amount of reality-based analysis will be able to explain my astounding and uncanny ability to make incredibly accurate predictions of celebrity deaths. So without further ado, dear listener, allow me to enter my psychic trance state and tell you the celebrities that I know are going to die during the remaining months of 2013. No, oh my God, really? I'm getting Tony Abbott, Deepak Chopra, and Prince Charles, and Camilla Parker Bowles are all going to die in terrible, tragic, freak accidents during the coming year. Oh my God! But that's four, not three! This cannot be true. So much tragedy in the coming year? Oh, hang on. Let me go back to my spirit guides for some more details. Tony Abbott is going to be on the campaign trail, visiting a sausage factory in Western Sydney, wearing a plastic helmet and fluorescent safety vest. Suddenly, he'll slip on a metallic gangway, slide under the safety rail, and fall into the chute leading down into the sausage mincer. By the time the factory workers turn off the machine, what was once the sacred flesh and blood of Tony Abbott will have been converted into at least 500 cocktail frankfurts. They will later be fed to the inconsolable mourners by George Pell during communion at Tony Abbott's state funeral at St. Mary's Cathedral in Sydney. Deepak Chopra will be out driving his Jaguar convertible around the sea cliffs of San Diego, when the guru of peace, love, and serenity will become involved in a road rage incident with a cyclist. In a fit of fury, he will first hurl his McFlurry out the window at the poor defenseless young cyclist. Then, when that fails to finish him off, he'll turn around and try to run the cyclist over. The cyclist, however, will duck out of the way just in the nick of time, but poor Deepak will go hurtling over the cliff, crashing onto the rocks 200 meters below. His car will instantly explode in a ball of flame, and his body will be incinerated, and so all that will be left of the Guru of Tranquility himself will be the 10 gold crowns once attached to his holy molars. Such a tragic end. Finally, Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles will be out on the moors of the Balmoral Estate in Scotland, hunting rabbits and other Scottish big game. After hours of roaming, Charles will finally shoot a highly endangered red squirrel. He'll be so excited that he'll go running headlong through the swampy marsh to collect the body of the rodent. However, much to his annoyance, he will very quickly find himself trapped in quicksand. Sinking fast, he'll call to Camilla to rescue him. Not being the most quick-witted member of the royal family, Camilla will throw him the end of her scarf, forgetting that she's still wearing the other end around her neck. Charles will pull frantically on the scarf, strangling Camilla in the process while he sinks deeper and deeper into the mud. Camilla will take her last gasping breath just at the moment that Charles' head sinks beneath the grey murk. Their bodies will be discovered only 6 months later, after the excitement at Kate Middleton's baby has died down, and a sharp-witted member of the royal household will realize that they haven't seen Charles and Camilla for a while, and send off the corgis to find them. The corgis will make a grisly, grisly find indeed. Oh, God. Oh, I am so, so sorry, dear listener, to be the one to break this tragic, tragic news to you. But please understand, I'm only the vessel for the predictions that the spirit guides are telling me. I'm just the messenger. I hope you understand. Well, dear listener, that brings us to the end of our psychic predictions here on Reality Check. We'll come back to them in our first show of 2014. And, well, I don't want to brag already, but I must say I do feel quietly confident. Now, I just want to finish off today's segment with a quick comment about someone who really does make accurate predictions and has become famous for it. But his predictions are not based on psychic powers, but based on reality, based on data and statistics and analysis. Who would have thought? And I'm talking about the American statistician and psephologist Nate Silver, whose fame has just been rising and rising thanks to his accurate predictions of the results of the US presidential elections. In 2008, he correctly predicted the outcome in 49 out of the 50 states. And in 2012, he was right in all 50 states plus the District of Columbia. And he did it all using statistics, data, and computer algorithms. And what's more, dear listener, he's also an out gay man and an agnostic. So definitely one of our heroes here on Reality Check. In fact, I'm sure he probably listens to the show. So Nate, congratulations. You showed the world the importance of making judgments based on data rather than prejudice and wishful thinking. And compared to frauds and charlatans like Sylvia Brown and Psychic Nikki, you are really a shining star. And one final comment about psychic predictions before we wrap up. I started preparing for this show back in early January and looked at some of the predictions that a lot of the psychics were making back then. And it's kind of odd, given that two important events were coming up soon after, that all the psychics missed them. And I'm talking about the resignation of the Pope, or as he's affectionately known here at Reality Check, Ratzo, and the asteroid that hit the Earth in a spectacular way over Chelyabinsk in Russia. Not one of the psychics saw those events coming. And yet, they're right up their alley. Psychics love anything to do with religion and celebrities, and the Pope is just about the biggest religious celebrity there is. And they also love spectacular and very visual natural disasters or events like a meteorite. And yet, in January, when they were making their predictions, they said nothing. They didn't appear on their radar at all. Very odd, isn't it? So, dear listener, I hate to say it, but I think that the lesson from today's show, and in fact from science and reality in general, is that the future is unpredictable. We can get a pretty good idea of trends in the short term by analysing the data, like Nate Silver does, but the future, by its nature, in fact, as a law of physics, a fundamental law of the universe, well, the future is unpredictable. So don't sweat it. Don't worry about things you can't control. Just live your life and try to be as happy as you can along the way. That's the moral of the story for today's episode here at Reality Check. Now, before we go to a song, if you'd like to send in your opinions or a comment or question on today's topic or an idea for a future topic, please send us an email. The address is realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, at gmail.com. You can also visit our website too for past episodes of Reality Check. That's at realitycheckonline.net. Alright, let's take a quick musical break now, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie reviews.
We have the fresh sound you're looking for.
Join 94.9.
Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. Streetlight people.
Hi, this is Robin, and you are listening to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au. And also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. The song you just heard there was Don't Stop Believin' by the cast of Glee. And I played that song because, well, we've been talking about how unpredictable the future can be. And that song has certainly had an unpredictable trajectory. It originally was released by the American rock band Journey in 1981 and rose to number 9 on the charts in the United States, but pretty much only in the United States. It then faded into history until 2009, when it was rediscovered, particularly in the UK, where it had never been a hit, and rose to the top of the charts again, this time all around the world. It is now one of the most downloaded songs of all time. The version sung by the cast of Glee then also became a huge hit around the world at the same time. So who would have predicted this trajectory for the song back in 1981? Nobody, I suspect. Not even Sylvia Brown. Now, just before we get into our movie reviews here on Reality Check, I just want to draw your attention, dear listener, to an ugly fact and remind you of what a backward country we live in here in Australia when it comes to censorship. You see, the Melbourne Queer Film Festival is about to start in a couple of weeks, and the organisers are required to submit their list of films to the good folk at our National Censorship Board. And the board, in its infinite wisdom, has decided to ban one of the movies that was going to be screened. A film called I Want Your Love by American filmmaker Travis Matthews. So too bad if you were planning to see that movie, dear listener, because now you can't. And you won't be able to see it at the Sydney or Brisbane festivals either. Because apparently it contains an image of a penis or something like that. And heaven forbid, imagine if we lived in a country where consenting adults could voluntarily go to a movie with a penis in it. Shock. Horror! That would be the end of the world. I mean, it's not like they've ever seen a penis before. And it's not as if they couldn't see one. And much, much more within about 5 milliseconds by getting onto the internet.
No, no, we don't live in a world like that at all. So luckily we've got the Office of Film and Literature Classification to protect us from such terrible catastrophes. Now, if you don't mind, dear listener, I'd just like to take a moment to speak directly to the members of the Censorship Board just to let them know how much we appreciate them protecting us from such evil. So I've just got a little message here that I'll read out, but of course I've had to kind of translate it into a language that the members of the board will understand. So here's the message. Right, now that I've got that thank you message out of the way, let's move on to our movie reviews here on Reality Check. And the three movies up for review today are The Imposter, The Impossible, and Zero Dark Thirty. Now, these three films are all very different, but the one thing they do have in common is that they all deal with real-life events that occurred within the last 20 years. The Imposter, about a missing child in Texas in the 1990s. The Impossible, about the Indian Ocean tsunami in 2004. And Zero Dark Thirty, about the hunt for Osama bin Laden. Let's start with the documentary, and that is The Imposter. In June 1994, a 13-year-old boy, Nicholas Barclay, disappeared from his home in San Antonio, Texas. He never returned and was presumed to have been abducted and murdered. 3 years later, however, the family gets a call from police in Linares in southern Spain saying that they've found a kid who claims to be Nicholas Barclay. His oldest sister travels to Spain to bring him back to Texas, and the family and the US Embassy and the FBI all accept that it's him, Nicholas Barclay, despite the fact that the guy looks nothing like Nicholas. He's got brown eyes instead of blue eyes, and he speaks with a strong French accent. Now, that's about all I'm going to say about what happens in the story, because the movie has some surprising twists, and I think probably the less you know going in, the better. But I can say that this is really a gripping and intriguing documentary. First of all, it has great production values. It looks very polished, it's cleverly edited, and the music is really good and effective too. But it's really the story that's the hook, because what happened is so unbelievable that it's really quite insightful to see interviews with everyone involved in the case and try to understand how such a thing could possibly happen. Basically, it just shows you how strong cognitive biases can be. If you really want to believe that someone is your son, you'll find reasons to believe it, despite all the evidence to the contrary that is staring you in the face. Literally, in this case. Another interesting aspect of the story is the fact that the family who lost their son is from the lowest socioeconomic rung of American society. Poor white trash, in other words, with little education and little understanding of the wider world, and therefore quite vulnerable to be exploited. For example, the sister, when being interviewed and recounting when she first heard news that Nicholas was supposedly alive and in Spain, says, "Spain? Isn't that on the other side of the country?" The documentary is also quite insightful into the mindset of the FBI investigating officer and the private investigator, who all have quite bizarre ideas about foreigners and people with foreign accents being somehow dangerous and spies and terrorists. In fact, it seems that they have about as much understanding of the wider world as the boy's family does. Now, this documentary, The Imposter, actually reminded me a little bit of a great documentary from 2003 called Capturing the Freedmans.
in that there comes a certain point in the movie where you're not quite sure who to believe anymore. It's that concept of the unreliable narrator, when you come to realize that maybe things are not the way that people have been making them out to be, which is always unsettling, but at the same time makes for a really interesting film. Anyway, I won't say too much more about The Imposter, except to say that if you enjoy good quality investigative documentaries with high production values, then definitely make an effort to see The Imposter. It comes highly recommended by Reality Check. Right, our next movie up for review today is The Impossible by Spanish director Juan Antonio Bayona. And based on the true story of a Spanish family's experience of the 2004 Boxing Day tsunami while staying at a beach resort in Thailand. The family has three young boys, and the film depicts basically what happens to the various family members after the tsunami strikes and how or whether they manage to get reunited and even survive. Now, The Impossible has been both a critical and box office hit, making over $160 million worldwide so far, which is quite extraordinary for a Spanish production and makes Juan Antonio Bayona one of the hottest directors around, after his previous critical and box office success with The Orphanage. I suspect a career in Hollywood now awaits him. And I have to say, I did enjoy The Impossible very much. It's not without its faults, that's for sure, but overall I liked the film, particularly for the first 30 minutes. Because the film has a bit of an odd structure in that the climax, the tsunami, happens at the beginning. The first 15 minutes or so show the family arriving in Thailand and settling into the resort on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And it's in these scenes that I think Juan Antonio Bayona's background in horror really works effectively. Because every time the camera pans to the stunningly beautiful tropical ocean, the mood is not one of peace and tranquility, but one of sheer menace, because we all know what's coming. I think he sets up those scenes really well. And then finally, the tsunami hits. And those scenes of the tsunami are worth the price of admission alone. This is one of the best staged, most realistic action or disaster sequences that I've ever seen. And in fact, probably the best thing about the film. You really get to experience what it must have been like to actually be in that tsunami. And you realize that the danger is not so much from being drowned, although that certainly is a huge danger, but the real danger is being churned and flung around in water that is so chock full of large, sharp, pointy, heavy objects that are also being hurtled around and could crush you or slice you or skewer you at any given moment. It's really a harrowing sequence and very well shot and edited. The other thing it makes you think about is how sudden death can sometimes just come out of nowhere. One minute you're lounging by a pool at a beautiful resort, reading, relaxing, maybe making plans for the future, feeling perfectly safe and as far away from danger as you possibly can be, and the next moment you look up and a giant wall of water and debris is about to crush you to death, and you realize you've got about 3 seconds left to live. For the people who went through that and survived, it must have been a truly life-changing experience. Now, the rest of the movie is then the aftermath of this disaster and how each character is going to try to survive with the various injuries that they've got, and whether they'll be reunited. And here I think the movie loses some steam because, well, you kind of know, well, just from the poster, really, and hearing anything about the story, you kind of know how it turns out, which dissipates a lot of the tension. And the director does get a bit heavy-handed here at times and often tries too hard for an emotional impact. Also, his horror techniques don't always work as well in some of these sequences. I think he could have used a lighter touch. Naomi Watts was nominated for the Oscar for Best Actress for her role in this movie as Maria, the mother of the family. And I have to say, she does a pretty amazing job. Apparently, the cast spent weeks being tossed around inside a giant water tank in Spain, so it seems they worked pretty hard for their money. And I think the best chemistry in the film is between Naomi Watts and Tom Holland, the young 16-year-old actor who plays her oldest son. They really form the central relationship at the heart of the movie, and both do a great job. So overall, while not without its flaws, The Impossible is definitely a movie worth checking out, in my opinion. Finally, let's get to Zero Dark Thirty. Now, this film was up for the Oscar for Best Picture, and unfortunately didn't win. I say unfortunately because I think it was the best film by far of the 9 contenders. Well, I've seen 8 of those 9 movies, and this was certainly the best in my opinion. In fact, I would go so far as to call this a must-see movie. I really, really enjoyed this film. Now, as I'm sure you've heard, dear listener, Zero Dark Thirty deals with the hunt for Osama bin Laden from the days following the September 11th attacks until his killing in May 2011. But let me let you in on a little secret of screenwriting here, dear listener. A film, a narrative feature film, is never actually about an event or an issue. It's about a character, a protagonist, a hero, and the journey that they go on. So, just as The Impossible was not really about the tsunami, but about a family and its struggle to survive, Zero Dark Thirty is not really about the hunt for Osama bin Laden, but about a young woman's relentless search and her journey along the way. And I think actually that's where the movie's strength lies, because we're following the Osama bin Laden hunt through the eyes of our protagonist, Maya, played by Jessica Chastain, who, over a period of 10 years of often tedious office work, finally puts the clues together to reveal the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden. And I found that process and her relentless search against the backdrop of changing world politics absolutely riveting. Now, this film has, of course, generated a great deal of controversy, particularly for its depictions of enhanced interrogation techniques, i.e. torture, with many commentators alleging that it condones torture. But I didn't find that. I thought that the intention of the director was to show what the CIA interrogators did, without really commenting on it. I think that's a perfectly reasonable decision to make as a director. Besides, the torture scenes are so shocking and disturbing, it's hard to see how the director could be said to be condoning those techniques. Anyway, I don't want to get too bogged down in all the controversies. I think, as a film, it stands up and works very, very well. And I think Kathryn Bigelow has really evolved into a very, very good director. The subtle way that she can create a scene that seems chaotic and confusing, and yet at the same time give you just enough information to follow what's happening without spoon-feeding you, I think that's the sign of a very smart director. It's a fine line she has to tread, and I think she gets it just right. It's a shame that she wasn't even nominated for Best Director at this year's Oscars. She won in 2009 for The Hurt Locker. I think she should have won again this year. They could have done that. Christoph Waltz won in both those years. Kathryn Bigelow should have too. So, The Impostor, The Impossible, and Zero Dark Thirty, 3 interesting films about recent historical events, and 3 films that come highly recommended by
Reality Check. And that brings us to the end of the 59th episode of Reality Check. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website to subscribe to the podcast. That's at realitycheckonline.net. Have a great week, everyone, and I'll be back with the next episode sometime in the coming weeks.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.